Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, which comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts in a way that encourages all to think for themselves so the best political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, the Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. Today we're talking about renewable energy, and we have several guests, four as a matter of fact, but we're going to start off with Susan Guerrant. Am I pronouncing your name correct, Susan?
Susan Guerrant.
Susan Guerrant is, to call her the librarian at Henley Middle School in Crozet is putting it mildly. I'm told she's the champion for green energy and renewable energy in the county of Virginia. And I get that from another one of our guests today, who is the environment compliance manager. So, but first, let's talk to Susan in a about what Susan and her eighth grade students at Henley Middle School are doing to discover, to implement, to find pragmatic uses for renewable energy. How are you today, Susan?
Fine. Thank you for having me.
It's absolutely my pleasure. I know we're going to speak in a bit to two of your students, and but let's ask you just to, first of all, Albemarle County, Virginia, which is where Henley Middle School is located, has just won a first prize for environmental green school challenge. Can you tell me who awarded that prize? And let's begin there.
I am going to have to refer you to Lindsay Snoddy to answer that question.
Okay, and she'll tell us that. I too have forgotten what the name. Oh, I know what it is. It's the Association of all the school boards in the Commonwealth of Virginia. They get together and they create these friendly competitions as a challenge. But the real point of the question is that even before this first prize was won by Albemarle County, you and the students at Henley Middle School were doing some incredible things with green energy. I mean, let's start off then with that wind turbine you've got out there in the front yard, so to speak.
Yes, we do have a wind turbine. In 2011, the turbine was installed along with two different types of solar panels on a roof, and that was the culmination of a lot of years of fundraising and some stellar grant writing by Ms. Snoddy, who I think you'll be talking to later.
Yes.
And we became a renewable energy resource center for the county, where students here have hands-on learning. Students who are in other locations can access our renewables and look at the data from them by way of computers, because we have the electronic dashboard monitoring.
Now, how did your students respond to this? Is this like an extracurricular activity, or is it worked into the curriculum in cooperation with other subjects and disciplines and other faculty members?
It's been a little bit of both. When we were in the fundraising phase, that was sort of a community effort where teachers from several different disciplines, everything from creative writing to social studies to science, music, art, everybody had something to contribute in terms of helping us raise the money. We were trying to raise $40,000 for solar thermal panels. Once we were awarded the award from the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy, so that we were going to get all of the renewable energies, then it became a way of how can we incorporate some of this renewable energy into our curriculum, what we know about that, and the data from there. So it kind of goes both ways. And beyond the Renewable Energy Center, we also have several other sort of green emphases in the school throughout the year.
Wow. Tell us about some of those.
Well, in sixth grade, our students do a huge sustainability unit where they look at, of course, energy, but they also learn about just small differences they can make in their own lives in order to be more environmentally proactive. In the seventh grade, students calculate their carbon footprint. They do a whole unit learning about the Chesapeake Bay. And, of course, we're in the watershed, and they learn how our actions here influence what happens in the Bay. Our math students at that grade level also take some of the data from our electronic dashboard monitoring and figure how they could apply those types of energies to smaller scale homes that they're using. So there's lots of math skills involved there. Wow. Our eighth graders learn about the law of energy conservation, which is how energy is transferred from one state to the other. And so, of course, there's very practical application when you talk about the energy from the sun. The windmill is the mechanical energy, and that transfers it into the electric energy. And then, of course, the electromagnetic from the sun into our solar panels, converting into electrical energy. So, well, tons of applications.
Wow. And you, it's just fascinating just to hear about all of this. It seems it's mind-boggling enough to think that government can do something right. But eighth graders and seventh graders and sixth graders launching into so enthusiastically into something that is so futuristic and applying it is to practical uses, as well as knowledge and education and information, yes, but in practical uses in your very school, yes? I mean, you, for instance...
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that I'm enjoying is because the turbine's been up now since 2011, our students who come in now sort of take it for granted, and I don't mean that they don't care about it, but they just are like, oh, a turbine, oh, renewable energy, of course that's what you want to have.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's what the future looks like, that we'll have these renewables that it will be. Well, of course we do. So it's really sort of pleasing to see them just adopt that and take it in.
Yes, I really appreciate that point, that they're not, this is not something exceptional in their mind. This is something we ought to be doing, and they're doing it.
Exactly.
So your solar panels on the roof of Henley Middle School, they actually heat the water in the school, yes?
Yes, they're responsible for, they take about 40% of our hot water load. And you can imagine the school with over 800 students, we use some hot water.
I guess you do, yes. Wow. I'm just so impressed with this. And if I sound a little speechless, which I rarely am, it is because... I've gotten to go to the school, take a few pictures, meet a couple of the students, and of course you, and I just think it's what education should be.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? And you mentioned Lindsay Snoddy. She, as I said, is the environment compliance manager for Albemarle County Public Schools, and I will be talking to her today as well. But she called you the champion of renewable energy in the western part of the county, and I think she meant every word of it. I think it's quite a compliment, and I think you've earned it.
Well, it's very generous praise. And, of course, Ms. Snoddy is responsible for writing the amazing 30-page technical grant that got us some of that renewable energy. So kind of hats off to her, too.
Yes, yes. It's quite a team and quite a lead by example from both of you. Tell us, I know there's maybe it's not funny, but it's a telling story about a concern about how tall the wind turbine was supposed to be originally?
Yes, the county has an ordinance that says that a turbine pole can be no higher than 35 feet. And anybody who knows much about wind energy knows that that is not going to get you much wind.
Yeah.
And in fact, most companies won't even install a turbine of any size with that short of a pole. So we, and by we, I mean Ms. Snoddy and myself, and a group of students went and appeared before the Board of Supervisors and sort of talked to them about that. And we did indeed end up with with a pole that's about 50 feet high. And we therefore catch some wind and are able to generate some energy.
That is just fantastic. I mean, talk about a lesson in civics. It's one thing to wave the Constitution and claim that you're for all the freedoms and you demand this and you demand that. It's another to actually embrace civics. And well, where better to do that than in school, and then apply it, to have teachers that would do that. You know, my hat off to all teachers and librarians. I didn't work in the public school system for much of my career, but when I did, I was always impressed with faculty at all levels. But I worked in middle school too, as well as, you know, college, and I met during that time a librarian much like yourself who had all of this desire to give children and students more than just here's a book, read chapter 12 and answer the questions at the back. And when she offered, we ended up establishing any number of things, including a school news morning program that was shot for television right there in the library, and brought in creative writers that she coached to write scripts. I mean, it was just grand. So,
well, you know, speaking of teachers is a good segue into a comment that has to be made, and that is, none of this would have happened without our faculty. I look at them as the champions. It's like I spearheaded the, you know, sort of the logistics, but so many of them stepped up and did so much hard work when we were making, you know, doing the fundraising, and now incorporating the data and so forth into their lessons. This has been a community effort in every sense, students, teachers, everybody.
It's so grand, because so often in the past, anyway, education has been you learn something in the history room and you learn something, then you go down the hall and you study English, and around the corner you study math, but not necessarily. I remember, I'll confess, as a student, I didn't really see the connection between all of that until I was an adult. And it sounds like at Henley, you are making that connection in a very special way, so that the students get to see this. These are not isolated subjects and education, but that they all blend and create a wonderful final outcome, yes?
Yes, that is certainly our goal.
All right. So tell me, I know there was another slightly funny story. It slipped my mind now, but it was something, we talked about the height of the wind turbine, but there was something else that, the students went out to wade into the chilly waters of the Chesapeake Bay. What was that like?
Well, you know, that was when they were taking their field trip to Wallops Island to do the water measuring with their science teachers. And I wasn't there, but all the reports were it was chilly, but it was worth it, and they got the job done.
Fantastic. And also, this also has a financial component. I know what it was I was going to ask. I do want to say that, before I forget, because I know that I'm going to cover this with Lemsey, but $400,000 is being saved with all of the countywide renewable energy programs. But my question was, and I let it slip my mind again. No, you keep talking about it. The fundraising. Now,
yes.
Give me that. That has a nice win-win. I'll trade you this for that, and then you can have this, and I'll take this over there, and then they'll have, and everybody ends up happy. What? Tell us about this sort of, in my opinion, unique approach to fundraising that you and the students at Henley have been through.
Well, most recently, I think this is what you're referring to, we work with an organization called Funding Factory, and we collect up used electronics, so people's old cell phones and digital cameras, those kinds of things that can unfortunately end up in the landfill.
Yes.
So we have a big drive and make it a fun contest with the students to see who can bring in the most, and it's used toner cartridges and you name it, we collect it, and we ship it off. And this organization sustainably either reuses it or recycles it. And then they send us a check per pound for how much that we've sent them. And then our students, in turn, our environmental club, chooses an environmental charity that they want to donate their money to for a particular year. And last year, we donated our over $500 to the Wildlife Center of Virginia over in Augusta County.
Oh, I love that place. Thank you personally. I thank you for that. I love that place. See, but that trail that you are describing of putting it all together and collecting what is no longer usable, sparing the landfill, getting it to people who can make use of it, who then write you a check, and then you donate the money. I mean, I find that I don't think one can say too much good about that. That's even more than civics, although civics is community outreach, I guess, at the extreme, and you guys are doing that. Is there anything else before we go, something perhaps I haven't asked that you want to add and make certain the audience knows about what you and Albemarle County and Lindsay are doing and renewables?
Well, I want to say that, you know, again, it was a whole school effort. We're just very fortunate here. We have community support, and that there are other really kind of amazing things going on countywide now in terms of sustainability and renewable energy. So it's sort of the tip of the iceberg. I think we're kind of stepping into the future and heading in the right direction.
Thank you so much. That is so true, and I'm so grateful you were on the show today. We're going to say goodbye to Susan in just a bit, but don't go away, anyone, because when we come back, we are going to talk with two of her eighth grade students. Give me their names again, Anna and Amy, is it?
Anna Dunn and Abby Palmer.
And Abby Palmer, yes. We'll be right back to chat with them, and Susan will stick around for that conversation as well. And so don't go away. Stay with us. This is The Reasonable Voice, and I'm Marcello Rolando, your host. Stay with us. Thank you, Susan. See you in a bit. Bye now. Well, I'm here. This is Marcello Rolando, your host, and I'm here at Henley Middle School. Would you call this Crozet? Albemarle County, Crozet, Virginia, and I'm visiting here because the Albemarle County Schools, public schools, just won first prize for green energy. Tell me about that. Just tell me what was it for. I should introduce everyone first. First of all, the teacher here is
Susan Garant.
Susan Garant, and I have two eighth grade students. One is
Abby Palmer.
Abby Palmer.
And Anna Lee Dunn.
Yes. And they're all very happy to be here, I can tell you. despite the nerves, these folks have accomplished a great thing along with many students and teachers in Albemarle County, Virginia. But I'm here, I chose Henley Middle School because I've been reporting on them for some time at various stages of this program for ecology, green energy. Maybe you should tell me you do composts. And what I find extremely exciting, they actually have solar panels here that warm the school's water. Now I'm going to stop talking, and we're going to try and get them to talk. So tell us who you are and tell us all about it.
So my name is Abby Palmer, and in sixth grade, we had wind turbines put up, a wind turbine put up.
Uh-huh. And you started this in sixth, do you have sixth grade here or over at Brown? Oh, so sixth grade, eighth grade here. Uh-huh. Okay. But you are now in the eighth grade.
I'm in eighth grade now. And then also in sixth grade, we had two kinds of solar panels put on the roof. Mm-hmm. There were regular solar panels and then ones that heat water.
Now, regular solar panels, what is that as opposed to heating water? What do they do?
They provide energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they provide energy.
As in electrical?
Yes.
Okay. Remember, no matter what, I'm not going to tell anyone, she's got her notes on her hands, but no matter what, you know more about this than most adults, believe me, and we are fascinated with what you guys are accomplishing out here. So tell us more. Do you want to jump in and add? Let us know who you are, who's talking.
I actually don't have stuff on.
Why don't you tell them what you're doing with the solar panel that's outside of the school and the art sculpture.
So I'm Anna Lee Dunn, and I've been working on a kinetic sculpture in art. I started in sixth grade, but this year, another teacher, Mr. Murphy, he's been putting it all together, and so eventually it's going to go up outside, and there's a solar panel out there waiting for it, and what it's going to do is the sun is going to help a bee spin on the middle of the sculpture.
It's going to help a bee as an artistic insect.
We made three flowers.
Gotcha.
And there's a bee in the middle one. Uh-huh. And it's going to be spinning.
So solar panels can provide electricity, warm the water here, and perform art. Wow. Anything else you guys have planned for solar panels?
I'll jump in and say teachers use the data for science and math classes. Our seventh grade math teacher, Ms. Ducey, is planning a unit where students build scale model homes, and they'll look at the data from our renewable energy and figure out which one is most efficient, and then have to do the math, scale it down, and then figure out which types of renewables they would put in the scale model home that they're designing. And then in eighth grade, our teachers, our students learn about the law of energy conservation, which is how one energy transfers into another kind, and they'll certainly look at the energy from the sun, you know, shining onto the, not shining, okay, and law of conservation, we're editing it. and they'll look how energy is transformed, the wind energy, mechanical energy, turning into the electrical energy, and then also the electromagnetic energy of the sun coming into our solar panels and being transferred into electric energy.
Susan, if I may call you Susan, what do you teach here?
I am the librarian, but I also sort of coordinate some of our environmental efforts here.
Wow, so renewable energy. Now, if I remember correctly, the United States Congress is having a little difficulty accomplishing that, but you guys here at Henley seem to be moving forward. Give us your name again and tell us more.
So, I'm Abby Palmer. And there are kind of like each year you do a different kind of energy thing. In sixth grade, you build model homes, like little, I mean, cities, like little, like that big. And
so about a foot square, you build a model of a city that's
about 2 feet by 2 feet.
2 feet by 2 feet.
And you try to make it as like renewable energy filled as possible.
So what does that mean? Does the city have lights and other functioning things?
Like, you have to put certain, like, it's just made of wood or whatever you choose to make it out of, but you have to put certain things in, like a hospital, and you have to have lights and energy, but then you can put little wind turbines in and little solar panels on the houses, and each like group of four or five people make a different one, and it's just really neat.
So it is neat, and it's 2 by 2 feet. It's a city, and what do you put the solar panels on the roof or whatever? But what is it that you are? What's your end goal? Is it to see how this would work, just as a visual, or does it function in some way? In other words, can you plug it in and the lights light up?
I mean, you can't like use it. It's like the solar panels might be made of like cardboard or something.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
But it's basically to teach the sixth graders about how there could be a more renewable city than what we have now, because it's the end of the unit on learning about renewable energy, so it's just kind of like a project to wrap the unit up.
In the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to discuss what they taught me in the sixth grade. Wow. What? Okay, now what about seventh grade? You say so each grade there is okay.
So in seventh grade, there's a trip to the Chesapeake Bay, and that's like four days.
Wow, on the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
What did you think of the bridge? Did you go across the Bay Bridge?
Yes.
That's brave. Okay, sorry.
So you actually have to apply because not everyone gets to go. You have to take tests, and in taking tests, you learn about how the Chesapeake Bay is a watershed, and you learn about oyster farming and how that has a lot to do with renewableness. And
Well, renewable energy, yes, but I like that renewableness. That's great, actually. Tell me, what do oysters have to do with renewable energy?
Well,
they don't. They have more to do with the health of the bay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that's good, because the bay could use a shot of good health.
It's sort of a different green emphasis.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and then you also have to take tests on, like, how the farmers can use renewable types of, or not use at all, fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you,
I don't know if this is a safe question to ask, but what's renewable fertilizer?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Right. There isn't renewable fertilizer.
Okay.
I think she started with renewable and
then
how farmers use fertilizer.
Yeah.
All right.
And then, so if you, like, pass all the tests, then you have to write an essay, and then the teachers choose a certain amount of people, and then they get to go to the Chesapeake Bay, and then you get to, like, go out into the bay, and the water's really freezing, but it's fun.
Mm-hmm. So, tell me your name again, just so our audience keeps up.
Abby Palmer.
Abby Palmer in the 8th grade. In the 7th grade, you had to earn the right to go be a part of this exploration at the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
And you had to learn stuff out, obviously, and then pass a test, and then learn more stuff. And then you're out there, and you, for all of that, you get to stand in the freezing bay. And what did you learn from all of that?
I mean, yeah, it was more of like hands-on learning, because we were still learning more stuff, and It was fun. Freezing water is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to, like, catch fish, like, little fish, like, in that net that you have behind.
You can talk.
In the net that you have, like, behind the boat. And then you get to, like, look at crabs. And it was really fun.
Fantastic. Did you catch crabs in the cage the old-fashioned way?
No.
No? How did you catch them?
We had, I don't know what it's called.
It was a giant.
Tell us who you are.
Oh, I'm Anna, and there was a giant flat boat, and we dragged a net behind the boat, and our boat kind of broke down.
No renewable energy.
All kinds of learning.
It's exciting being an explorer, which is and breaking new into new territory, and in the 7th grade, no less. So what is the 8th grade program? What are you doing now? And would you like to talk a little? Not that we won't come back to you, but...
Well, I'm going to say they are not at that part in the 8th grade where they're doing that. But what you might ask them about is they're both members of our environmental... We have an outdoor environmental club here, and we do a number of fun trips, but we also do some fundraising where we recycle electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And you could talk a little bit about that, and also what we did with the money we raised last year.
Okay. First of all, what did you do with the money you raised last year?
So we pick a charity, like an animal charity, like the Wildlife Center in Waynesboro, and we donate money there, and it helps all the animals and stuff get medical needs and food and other stuff. And so last year we made almost over $500.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What sort of renewable electronics or whatever else did you offer up to raise the $500?
So, like, what we do is we advertise it before Christmas, and then during Christmas a lot of people get new phones and stuff, and then they have these old phones that they don't want anymore, and so they bring them in here, and we collect them in boxes, and we turn it into a place, and they give us money for it, for all the electronics.
And where's the place you turn it into? What's that called?
It's called Funding Factory, and once the electronics arrive there, they take care of sustainably recycling it. So it's kind of a win-win. The kids can earn money for their environmental charity that they choose.
And lead by example.
Right.
Because you're not only raising money and, of course, helping whoever you give it to, but you're also raising awareness. And you're practicing what you preach. You are creating a recyclable situation. I think that's quite admirable. Wow. Okay. Next, are you doing one this year? It's almost Christmas.
Yeah. This year it's going to be our second annual drive.
And when will that be?
After Christmas.
Okay, all right. Because I've got some Bring them out. Come closer and turn the mic, and let's see, how do we, we're doing fine here. I'm just wondering what we have not covered. I would like to talk about the practical application that you are making here at the school. So you are learning how to do this, recyclable energy, green energy of all forms, but you then are applying it at your school, Henley Middle School. Have you shared any with the elementary school across the way?
Not this year. A few years ago, we had kids writing books about solar energy, a creative writing class doing that, and those students shared their books out with the elementary students.
I love that, all the interdisciplinary cooperation, too. Well, I just love that. So what, in my past, when I've done media and theater and television and opera and all that, and just sometimes try to get those different artists to work together and realize we're all in this together, was a real challenge. But you seem to have overcome those obstacles. There's math, science, and what other classes are involved? The library, obviously.
The library.
Which is the center of all of it.
Right, and throughout the years we've had creative writing, our music classes contributed. This year our entrepreneurship and art classes will be working with us for a contest around Earth Day where students will reuse and repurpose items that they already have and create new artworks or functional pieces or wardrobe pieces or whatever. So that's going to be kind of fun.
Fantastic. Wow. Okay, so back to my original question, sorry. You heat your water, I think that's what really caught my eye, with the solar panels here. You heat the water at Henley Middle School. Isn't that sort of, I mean, what do you run into, let's just play the devil's advocate, were there objections from county government that you had this system for heating water as opposed to however they used to heat it before you guys showed up?
I mean, no, I don't think so. Like, we're doing a good thing for energy, yes. So I don't see why there would be any objections, but I don't know any kind of...
The hot water heater they were happy to embrace. Where we ran into trouble was actually with our wind turbine. The County of Albemarle has a law on record that says a wind turbine's pole can only be 35 feet high, which is absurd, because, of course, you can't catch the wind energy at that height. And so we had to go and appeal to the Board of Supervisors, and students went and spoke very intelligently about the need for the pole to be higher. And we got a special kind of waiver, and therefore our pole is about 50 feet high now, which is, you know, what you need in order to capture the wind and make it actually turn.
To all the Henley Renewable Energy Explorers out in Crozet, it's been an excellent interview, enjoyed it, and stay with us. We're going to take a break now for our spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins. Don't go
wind,
away, we'll be
water,
right.
Water, land, honeymoon, beach, bodies lying in the sand. Wind, water, land. 6 June, beach bodies lying in the sand. Intimacy, cool, calm breeze. Infantry, fuel, napalm grease. Tropical swaying, palm trees. Flags waving, honor deceased. Grenada, grenade. Pearls for her, Pearl Harbor. Parasailing, parachute. Paradise, paratroopers. Wind in her hair, defending Earth's air. Whale watch, dolphins, baby seals. Binoculars, Navy SEALs. Scuba diving, depth dive, bomb divers. Marine life, marines live, submarines. Great Barrier, reef, barricade, aircraft carrier. Across the threshold, carry her. Wounded soldier, over the shoulder, carrying. Wind, water, land. Defend, water, land.
Welcome back to the Blog Talk Radio of the Reasonable Voice. I'm Marcello Rolando, your host, and our next guest today is Lindsay Snoddy, who is the Environment Compliance Manager for the Albemarle County Public School System, and she's working with teachers, students, and administrators to help everyone get educated about conserving energy and recycling and most of all, I think, these days, renewable energy, like like wind turbines and solar panels. But hello, Lindsay, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, absolutely. Our pleasure. So let's, I know we've talked a bit before, and I've been out to Henley Middle School in Crozet. I know you've got some champions out there for the cause. But tell me, what fills your day on a daily basis trying to get people aware? Are you working through the children to get to the parents, or what's your plan?
It depends on the day. I'll say my job is quite varied. We many people probably don't know this, but we do have 6 schools on well water. So I am the operator for those well systems. We have asbestos management, indoor air quality issues, chemical hygiene plans, environmental regulation compliance in general, a lot of training sessions, and then energy and water conservation awareness, and also planning and implementing those projects that do save us energy and save us water.
Wow.
And as you mentioned, also the waste management recycling aspect as well.
What, having had a grandmama with a well that every time we went there was the coldest, purest water I ever had, but with schools on well water, I have to tell you, I wasn't aware of that. Tell us, how does that work?
Sure, we have 6 schools on well water. They are the ones you probably suspect are in the more rural areas in our county, and we are required to have a well water operator, a Class 6 operator licensed through DPOR, and that is me, and we have a backup operator as well. We test the water weekly, and we treat the water with chlorine.
Gotcha.
Disinfection. So, yeah, it's a great little well systems. We have very reliable wells and good storage at each of those locations.
Okay. Well, thank you. It makes sense. I just guess I never thought about it. But what about now? So your position with Albemarle County Schools, you are the environmental boss for Green Schools Challenge. I know. Well, first of all, is that a yes or no?
I guess I am the boss of it. I have to arrange the application, but it does, it just, I'm in charge of pulling together all the aspects that were needed to even put in the application. And part of the challenge that is unique is it pulls from a lot of different areas. Part of it is, do we have an environmental policy? And we've had that in place for years. The other parts are energy efficiency, how efficient are our schools? And 23 of our 26 schools do have the Energy Star label, which means they're operating in the top 25% of buildings compared to similar buildings as far as energy efficiency is concerned. It looks at green buildings, our waste management, and if we have an anti-idling policy for our buses, which is in place, and it also looks at indoor environmental quality and how we're bringing the students into our environmental efforts, which touches on why Henley is the focus of the story as well.
Fantastic. I'm sorry about the, I couldn't come up with a better word. I'm Italian. Boss just seemed to pop. But since you brought up, I know you lead a great team, and I know you work to have the collaboration and coordination of administrators and teachers and students. But the Albemarle County Schools have won the first prize in a school challenge for green energy. Tell us about that.
That's the Go Green Virginia Green Schools Challenge, which is more than energy. It ties into all those different angles I just mentioned. But yeah, we're excited to get first place. We've participated for 5 years. And these aren't things that we necessarily did to be part of the challenge. They're things that are ongoing, and the challenge just recognizes those efforts.
Nice. Very good. So tell us something about the Henley Middle School. I mean, I went out there, as I said, and interviewed, and I talked to a couple of the students and the librarian there. I'm just wondering about what you can tell us technically or otherwise about the wind turbine and the solar panels. I know they... the students told me they heat the water at the school and provide a certain amount of electricity. Can you give us some numbers and specifics?
Sure. We have 3 different renewable energy systems at Henley, and those were funded through a grant application and fundraising dollars that were raised by the school over the course of more than 2 years they worked on getting money. their initial vision was to just have solar thermal panels, and those are the six panels on the roof that heat the water, about 60% of the water needs for the school.
Mm.
And after this grant application, or the grant became available, we were able to leverage the money they had raised for the solar thermal system and expand the vision for what would be at the school. And that's when we added the solar photovoltaic and also added the wind turbine, which is more an educational feature of the school. It's a Skystream 3.7 model, so it's a small turbine, it's 2.7 kilowatts, and it is the model that's recommended by the Wind for Schools program in Virginia. And the unique part of that is that they'll compare what this turbine produces compared to different turbines of the same model across the country. So it's neat for students to be able to look at what something in Utah is producing, also a Skystream 3.7 model, compared to what's at their school that they're looking at.
Fantastic. And I understand there was a little discussion before the supervisors of the county about the height of the wind turbine.
Sure. It was initially restricted to 35 feet. And just when we got when we were awarded the grant, it became known to us that Skystream stopped making their smallest tower height.
Mm-hmm.
So we couldn't even get a turbine of under a 35 foot height restriction. So we did get a zoning variance. Uh-huh. To have a 51-foot structure there.
Excellent. And it's doing all you would hope for?
Yeah, again, that's a more educational piece. Our major power producer is the solar photovoltaic array.
Now, also, today, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, today I just looked up the number because it's changed since we talked last. We're at 126,000 kilowatt hours since the system was installed.
Wow, and that's just since our last chat?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, that's been updated since we last
talked. I got you. Okay. And also, we save money. You know, that's in any time, it's time to save money. But I think people who sort of resist this new energy, if you will, might not always understand that it also saves dollars. Can you give us some figures?
Yeah. That number that I shared with you, the 126,000 kilowatt hours,
yes,
would have cost us a little bit over $10,000 in our energy costs. And again, if you're buying the system outright, you're counting on that to pay back for your initial capital cost. But since this was funded through a grant, that's the savings for us each year.
Fantastic. The students tell me that they, I don't know how much you were directly involved with this, but they went to the Chesapeake Bay and were there for 4 days and then learning how, and a sort of different ripples, no pun intended, of green energy. Were you aware of that, and can you add to that?
I did not know about that trip, so I'm sorry I can't add more about what they were doing.
We talked quite a bit about it, so it's okay. I was just wondering, how do you find that other schools? I mean, I know that Susan is a Garant.
Grant.
Susan Grant, who is the librarian at Hendley Middle, really seems to be very hands-on. And one thing that one of the many things that impressed me is that so many different subjects, that is, classes, you know, math, science, you would sort of expect that. But there are other classes as well that seem to be jumping in and being a part of this pie. Do you find that kind of cooperation or coordination even at other schools in the area?
Yeah, it's been, I'll just mention for Henley, the classes that tied in that I wouldn't have expected are the graphics class, who designed the signage for the system.
Yes.
You know, you can pay professional artists to do some signage design for you, but what these students came up with was amazing, and it far exceeded my expectations of what they would produce, and we got it into production, and you'll see those systems for the signage at Henley today. That was a unique class that I didn't expect to tie into the system.
Yes.
At other schools, we have environmental champions throughout. Susan is a notable one. She really has contributed immensely to the environmental efforts at Henley. But it always helps when you have that person that's there on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
We have 26 schools, so that person can't be me every day. So it definitely takes that person at the school level to champion these programs as well.
Okay, and maybe not quite the last question, but almost. How does all of this affect carbon dioxide, and how are we affected by carbon dioxide without this kind of program?
Sure. We're probably reducing our carbon dioxide contribution the most by reducing our energy usage overall throughout the schools. And as I mentioned, we're operating in the top 25% of similar school buildings throughout the nation. So we do try to get that number even better every day. We try to program our buildings so they're not running when they don't need to be running.
Mm-hmm.
We are installing more efficient lighting so we're not wasting money there and wasting energy. And just to give you a feel for how much carbon dioxide we've saved from entering the atmosphere through the renewable energy technology at Henley, that's been about 90 tons of CO2 since the system was installed. So that gives you just a feel of the capacity there.
Yes. Well, all of this has been fascinating and is fascinating, and that it's going on for people at the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade level, that they're learning. Obviously, that's the way to go because they are the future, the old tired cliche, but it's true. And as they learn and go home and tell their parents, and then, of course, as they get older, because the students at Henley told me that much of what they do there was started by students who are now at West Albemarle High School, yes?
Right.
So it's definitely marching forward, and I if the people with gray hair just can't see, or for whatever reason to make the choices and transition, certainly by attrition, students and teachers and administrators like yourself are leading the way, and I think we're very fortunate. Are there programs to your best of your knowledge throughout the rest of Virginia?
It varies per school division. We have some very unique divisions in Virginia. We have, you know, Fairfax County that has over 200 schools, and we have a lot of counties around us that just have a handful of schools.
Mm-hmm.
So it does vary. I'd say a lot of this is going on, but it just depends on who it is. We're lucky enough to have my position so I can focus on this.
Sure.
In our energy conservation efforts. In other systems, smaller systems, it might be just somebody where it's 20% of their job. If they just have 5 schools. So, yeah, it's continuing. And obviously, there are first, second, and third place in this competition.
Mm.
And they have different population brackets for each school. So there are a lot of schools participated. I believe it was over 40 districts.
Wow.
That just participate in the Go Green Virginia Green Schools Challenge.
Fantastic. Is there a website our listeners can go to learn more about this and what you're doing and what the students at Henley are doing?
Sure. If you go to Henley Middle School's main site, they have a link on their front page, and you can see all the information about the renewable energy systems there and the live production of what those systems are doing.
All right. Well, thank you so very much, Lindsay, for being on the show today. We're going to say goodbye to Lindsay now, but stick around, everyone. We'll be right back after a bit of a commercial here.
Defend water, land, pina colada, strawberry, tangerine, water, canteen, ping pong paddle, ping ship battle, resort, a last resort, club med, medic, blood red, cruise ship, missile cruisers, forever friends, I hope this never ends, never friends, will this ever end, memories, memorial, rest and peace. Rest in peace. Sunset. Suns. Vets. Splash. Play. Bombs. Away. Waves. Planes. Crash. Shore. Is Earth for. Love. War.
Thanks for staying with us today. This is The Reasonable Voice, Marcello Rolando, and here in the studio with me today are our spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, and the dynamic philosophical duo, Michelle Upperman and Daniel Garner. And as I said, I'm your host, Marcello Rolando. Michelle and Daniel are the creators of OG Rose. And we're talking, you know, the business of war and who's... you know, war loses money as in it costs the taxpayer. That's how it loses money. It costs us money
in a number of ways that government could serve us, help us. It's not that we need to be a. I mean, I don't need the government handing me a check for anything other than if I work for them and they owe me a salary or giving me taxes I've overpaid or whatever. That's fine. Otherwise, that isn't the issue. But it is an issue for me that I firmly believe I the taxes we pay are is the money we lend to our government to run the country. And run the country is a vague umbrella. It means to take care of the American citizens. To make, and by take care of, it doesn't mean here I've got to feed you or, unless you're hungry. It doesn't mean I've got to give you a job. I can't guarantee that. But it does mean American citizens have a right to expect that they have some degree of equality and opportunity to advance, to grow, to develop, to explore, to learn. And that's what I think is government's primary responsibility to us. And if that has been compromised, I say if because I'm feeling generous in the holiday season, if that has been compromised by a war machine, that, by the way, a five-star general warned us about on his way out of office, but nonetheless he did. Dwight D. Eisenhower is president.
Right.
And then that brings up the Dulles brothers, but I don't want to go there today necessarily. But what do you think? I mean, what government, war, taxes, and we the people? There you go.
Well, I think it's a sensitive subject because in America we have to divide war from troops. So you see people when they say,
exactly,
don't matter your position on the war, but support our
troops. Yes.
And it becomes difficult because then you have to be like, well, I don't support this war, but if I don't believe in them getting the shields and the tanks that they need, then people look at me like I don't care about the people. So it becomes difficult to divide the two. So
that's,
I think,
corporate manipulation. But sorry, go
well,
on.
Well, I was just watching last night. There's a show that comes on CNBC called American Greed.
Yes, yes.
And these people who run scams and they tell you how it all happened. So there was these two sisters who were selling hardware, and they were making money, but it wasn't anything major. But then they somehow found a loophole because they were sending bolts and nuts over to the war, but the way the computer system was set up, the shipping didn't cross with the actual product. So they were charging like 30 cents, and they were charging up to like $1 million worth of shipping. And nobody ever found out until they got $20 million, because nobody had to look at it until they made a mistake. Right. But one of the guys was making the point that he said the reason that this system was set up is because it seemed very noble. It was like, who's going to argue with getting things and supplies over there as quick as possible? He was like, I don't believe any of this. To him, he just thought it was garbage. It was just a way to... He said it wasn't nobility, it was more laziness. No, that's the way he saw it.
Lazy and inefficient, and there's a lot of greed to it too. Michelle?
Oh goodness. Well, I think that when it comes to our tax, you know, our money that we're giving back in taxes and how the government uses it, you know, there's a lot of questions about how you know, you said it's a big umbrella term of like, you know, you're using that money for the good of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the question becomes, how do you know, what's good, and how you know what the specifics of good are? You know, how do you know what funding for schools needs to be? How do you distribute that if you haven't even ever been inside the schools, because you're making decisions at a higher level than, you know, local people even understand or know about? So that's just one thing that I think about when it comes to taxes. But another thing with war, I think that's an excellent point that Bernard brought up. And I think there's also this really, you know, I feel like this tension because, well, I immigrated to the United States, my family and I. So I often think about like the freedoms and liberties of the United States. And I know that was because of the, you know, lives lost in war, you know, in like World War I, World War II. You know, you think about like the wars that have been that fought for the nation to be where it is today, you know, the American Revolution to start, you know. So it's just, I think that there is a merit in people sacrificing for their country. I just, you know, the question of warfare today, I don't know if it's the proximity to it that makes it difficult to see, you know, to have clarity on the rightness of it or not, and if government's really using our money for good things or bad things. But it seems to be a little bit more clear, mm-hmm. you know, as to if the wars we're fighting are right, if they're not right, you know, if money should be going toward them at all or not, you know, especially if it's, but you know, it's at the same time though, it's like, well, okay, so we earn, you know, we give more taxes. That's a very small sacrifice compared to losing your life potentially, exactly. you know, so.
I just don't think we should ask any American to sacrifice their life, their mental health, a limb,
yeah.
to, and there are wrong wars as well as correct and necessary ones. I think the Revolutionary War, obviously, to establish the nation, the War of 1812 to preserve it, the Civil War to re-preserve it and extend rights to all citizens.
Right.
World War One, well, that was, you know, a transition of royalty, heads of state mm-hmm. to something resembling democracy. World War Two, of course, if we had not fought that, who knows what kind of world we would be living in.
Right.
But after World War Two, I'm not so certain that we can point to a war, and regardless of making a judgment whether it was good, bad, right, or wrong, was it really for the American people, the good of the American people? Because that, I believe, is the people who make money off of war and war munitions and manufacturing, whatever, are the ones who are doing, as Bernard said, saying support our troops and making us feel guilty then if we speak against a war. But they're not supporting the troops because the troops are dying for the wrong reasons. They're dying so these guys can make money off of the drones they make. Okay, thank you.
If the CEO of the companies of which was making money off of these wars had to go fight in it, you
exactly.
might have a
or his law. Sons or daughters.
Same with government. There's a big difference between picking up a gun and shooting someone and financing a person who you don't know in a distant land to shoot someone. And so consequently, war is an abstract thing. It becomes
yes.
very distant, and so
yes.
it's very hard to take seriously. In a globalized world that we have today, where nation states are kind of mixing together into economic units like the EU, it's very hard to know how in the world war can ever be useful. Keynes, at the end of the general theory, talks about, you know, the more that your financial systems are, he says you're going to have less war. And arguably his goal was to have a world with less war, and that's what created the system that he has. You know, if you were to go to war with China, which people have alluded to on both sides, even Obama has talked about needing the Pacific theater to have a stronger navy, that would crash your economy. I mean, you can't go to war with China. That's ridiculous. Unless our economy crashes and then we go
and
to war
go
with
to
them.
War.
But that, and that arguably is usually where World War II and war would emerge from. There's two ways to chain someone who you think is doing something wrong. If Michelle is pushing me, I can either push back or I can bake her a cake, as silly as an example as that is. I can make her like me. One of the best ways to transform nations is to help them develop and to innovate. If in the Middle East, when the Taliban is recruiting children when they're 4 years old and brainwashing them, mm-hmm. in essence, well, you're going to have to break down that structure of brainwash and propaganda if you're going to truly change a nation. And also, if you're in a village where it's hard to get running water, and the Taliban show up and they're actually improving the quality of your life, well, and again, you know, to us to say the word Taliban is so obvious, well, that's obviously a terror network. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't necessarily know that if you're on the ground of Afghanistan. If they're the ones giving you water and giving your dad a job or something like that. So if you're going to go in and destroy a nation or and then quote-unquote rebuild. Today, I guess if you're going to go in to a nation, you have to be committed to it for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be committed to it for pretty much ever until it is rebuilt and redone, because you can't go into a nation and say, we're going to wipe out the bad guys and then we'll see what happens. That's arguably what happened. That's what we do. And so then it makes it worse.
Yes.
In the New Testament, Jesus says, you know, if you remove a demon, but don't, you know,
don't
fill it with good, seven more kind of fill it.
Exactly.
And then it's much worse. There's a sense in which America, unfortunately, has been doing this, where you go in and you don't redeem a nation. Arguably, though, if you go into Afghanistan and you give them Apple computers and you give them infrastructure and you give them a more technological society, then, well, yeah, you're gonna make things better. So I think there's better ways to do war than what we do. War of kindness.
To tag on what Daniel's saying, I think I just thought as he was talking, you know, you could actually say war is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Like people say war is hard, but if you think about it, war is actually easy because it's a lot easier to sit back at a computer with a remote control or from a distance and shoot somebody than to go to them face to face, flesh to flesh, experience to experience, family to family, and meet them and be like, oh, you're actually different than what I perceived because now I'm talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's this book called Sex God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bell. Rob Bell. And I think there was a passage where he said it was American soldiers and had taken capture of, I think, Taliban or somebody.
Yeah.
And so the Taliban guy was supposed to be in line, but he kept getting out of line. And, the American guy was like, get back in line.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept doing it. And then finally he says, please, please, if I don't make it, you have to give this letter to my father. And it's like the American soldier said he had to turn around because he started to tear up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said, because I had... this guy had no idea, but I had issues with my father. And it was that moment human connectedness that caused this soldier to even break down, who was supposed to be his enemy. So it's just that empathetic.
And there's stories like that in all wars. The Civil War, they're very famous stories, where they literally would stop at the end of the day, and the North was on one side of the river and the South on the other.
Right.
And they would meet, guys would come out and meet in the middle of the water, of the river, so they could smoke a cigarette. One get a light, one had a cigarette, whatever. And they would talk because, of course, they were in quite literally, as well as figuratively, brothers or cousins who knew one another or knew, oh, yeah, I know that town. But the war went on. We have outdistanced it in years, but it was for the longest time, of course, the longest war. I just think Americans, it's a great country, it's great people. We get offended by a lot of things, certainly criticism, and one of the criticisms is that we're imperialistic. But we resent that, and yet we have empire. We have military based in countries for decades, and we are creating new places where they will need to be placed for decades. And it isn't as altruistic as we'd like to think. It isn't just so we can rebuild them.
Mm-hmm.
It is arguably so that we are in the right position. If anyone attacks us, we can get to them faster.
Mm-hmm.
But the real reason is empire. It is control, and we are in a position to have control. And while the military is the instrument, and the government is the legality, the legal umbrella, it's still the guys on Wall Street who finance this because they are creating markets. So they make the money when the war munitions are used, and they make the money in the peace when the guy has to buy his Apple computer or parts or use. Mm-hmm. Anyway, how pessimistic can that sound? I love my country. I just think, John Whitehead said recently in an interview, it's all about the money now, and support our troops. If you want to support your troops, as I've read on some bumper sticker, bring them home, you know.
Well, I just want to say before when I talked about, how there's less clarity, and, we talk a lot about, Bernard and I have talked about this too, how, say, you're in, Nazi Germany, and you're a 10-year-old boy who's, he's German,
mm-hmm.
how, you may not know anything about what's really going on. And later you can say, well, it was clearly everything, clearly this was what was wrong, this was what was right, this is what was happening. But if you're in the midst of it, it's much, much more difficult to see the big picture. Now, I think that's why the proximity to the wars happening today are a little more clear to see the rightness or the wrongness of them. But I will say, too, that, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, technology.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, think about it. If we didn't have the technologies we have today, war wouldn't be such an abstraction because you'd have your knife and you'd have the person in front of you and they'd have their knife or whatever, and that's your battle.
It's only 1% of the population fighting it, and they're now volunteering to go. So the rest of us, I think the saddest definition I ever saw of Americanism was when Chris Matthews at a university campus, I can't remember which, asked for a show of hands how many people support the war, and almost every hand went up. Students, okay? And then he said, how many are willing to go and serve in the army in the war? Not a hand. Even Chris Matthews, who's really speechless, as myself, he said, well, he didn't know what to make, so he had right. to go to a commercial.
Right.
Well, I didn't mean to cut
out.
I think a part of that is what Bernard was saying earlier. You don't know how you cannot support the war without saying that you don't support the troops. And even in the very act of talking about what we're doing, there can be, like, talking like we are, there can be an element of uncomfortableness, because there's like, well, we wouldn't want someone to hear who served in a war what we're saying, because they could take offense. And that's a big issue, because if you fought in Iraq and you hear someone say something along the lines of it's imperialism, you go, by the way, my brother died. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's real. They could say that what we're doing, you know, we have the luxury, because the war is abstract from us, of saying that's imperialistic and it's greed because we're not there. But the issue should be, is it in fact imperialistic or not? But there is that element where it's so hard,
so emotive. The issue for me is not whether or not it's imperialistic. The issue for me is that they're mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and sisters and so forth who go off with the flag and the uniform, who believe they're fighting for their country, mm-hmm. and they're being used.
Well, too,
they're being used to make money for a few people at the top, and they are dying for it. And when I see the parents on television
right.
talk about he loved his country, they're right. I know
right.
he did. But how? What else can they say or think? Because
right.
if they
right.
if
oh, well,
they
that's
thought
the
anything
that's
else,
exactly.
yeah.
And I wasn't mean to.
No, I
know what you meant. Well, that's the dilemma. Once you start war, you create this complex
yeah.
of a no-win situation. And I don't think politicians or the American people or corporations or businesses take that seriously. The very act of starting the war creates a situation where no one wins. So you have to be very careful. The other thing I was going to say is if we had to take a knife and stab someone, then when we saw soldiers that had post-dramatic stress,
yes,
we would
yes.
be much more empathetic.
Yeah.
We as a society are not empathetic. We actually, I read an article where people in the military view people who have post-dramatic stress disorder as you know, weak, as there are these stigmas that are attached to it. But if you, that then creates a society that's not able to handle troops when they return. And it doesn't help, too, if you have a society that's, like I think happened with Vietnam, where so many of the public was saying, you're baby killers and you war. Well, my goodness, you imagine, you try going over and being in that situation. There's just a lack of empathy. And I think if we as a society became more empathetic, we'd be more thoughtful before going to war, we'd be more thoughtful
yeah.
when war occurs, and we would also be better at keeping money
yes.
from driving these institutes.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly where I was going. Like, because we always talk about the creative aspect. So, you know, I would say on one side you have the masculine and the kind of strength and all these, you know, more outgoing tendencies. But then we have the creative, the feminine, the empathetic, the artistic. And it's like, if we were to start to balance that out more, this could start to prevent, because I even noticed, like, within myself as the years went on, it's like, why is it my first inclination to be like, yeah, let's, I was like, wait a minute, I don't even, like, why is our first inclination to want to get someone, because
yes.
you see it on TV, mm-hmm. and, I mean,
this is
a whole different conversation, which will take many sessions, but just, you know, the whole masculinity, like, redefining that, because
mm-hmm.
you have so much of that masculine power that's going out into the world,
mm-hmm.
but where is the feminine power to sort of balance that, to say, hey, how about we talk to them first,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
let's try to talk first, and then we can shoot, if they don't listen, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, true, and we have examples of that with President Obama. When he was running for president, standing up there with a number of competitors for the nomination, including some great names like our current vice president and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and others. His whole point was, I think we should talk to everybody, including Iran. And wow, how the people on his team went after him. Because, oh my God, we should talk instead of blowing them up. And of course, the Republicans, the next debate, they ran with it. That's understandable. But the point is, here we are now talking to Iran. And I think, to me, I'm Italian. I know how to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up with four uncles and plus my dad, who had all been in World War II at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and listening to my grandmama pray for each one of them one name at a time. But I also grew up watching how they didn't want to talk about war.
Right.
And when they did talk about it, they would say, we saved our country from Nazi Germany and from the Japanese. My dad would never buy a Japanese-made car. But you know, I can understand that because they were over there in that. But I think my biggest issue is the young people, if like with 9/11, somebody blows up people, Americans on American soil, and I expect that we need to do something about it. And I, in my opinion, that something was to go to Afghanistan, mm-hmm. not Iraq, but to Afghanistan, and wherever else we had to go to find the people who had done this to mm-hmm. us, and to make certain they were not able to do it to anybody ever again. I understand that. I don't understand sending young Americans, male and female, to a place where we really are not defending ourselves from some immediate danger, and then having those people at least damaged, mm-hmm. if not killed, and thinking that's okay because we're and because they just hit us with that support our troops, and then oh yeah, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Just one quick point. So Daniel Pink, in his book, A Whole New Mind, has a chapter on empathy, and he talks about how when President Clinton at one point said, "I feel your pain," like his ratings went down because people didn't want a president who like empathized with him. Mm. They wanted a strong, bold leader, which, I mean, both are important. But it's just interesting that his approval rating overall dropped. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but I guess I would at least expect the women's side to go up. You know?
Well, that gets into where if you're empathetic in a society that doesn't value empathy, it can hurt you. This is what I'll say. There's a big difference between being America and saying, let's talk to Iran, and being Israel. Because if you're Israel and one nuke goes off, your country's gone.
Yeah.
And so I think even in America saying we should talk to them, there's a way in which in saying that you have to be empathetic and even saying, let's talk to them. Because, you know, America can have a 9/11 and the country doesn't fail. Mm. You know, it's in New York. In Israel, if Iran gets a nuke and a terrorist blows it up, even if the Iranian government, let's say the Iranian government is 100% genuine and they don't want to make missiles or anything, but they get the technology and a terrorist gets it and it blows up in Israel, they're gone.
Yes.
Their nation is gone. So I think there's a difference between America saying we only have military, we only work militarily when in defending ourselves in Israel. Because in Israel, a preeminent, you know, letting another nation get the first strike can be the end of your country. But so my point is this, I'm not saying you don't talk to Iran, but there's a way in which even in the saying, the very act of how you talk about talking to other people, you have to be empathetic of those who don't,
to
everyone. Yeah. Because not every nation has the luxury of two oceans.
Didn't work ultimately.
Well, right. Yeah. And I think too, until we become empathetic of what it's like to be a small boy in Afghanistan and to have the Taliban coming into your neighborhood and offering you opportunity. Until we're empathetic to Israel and where if one attack goes off, their whole country is gone. And until we become empathetic to people in general, we will never be able to go to war in any other way than violently. And ultimately in a manner that doesn't make the world a better place.
Well, the first step of empathy is to realize that we are, those other people are equal to us.
Yes,
we are no better than they are. This has been, as always, a stimulating conversation with our our panel here with spoken word poet Bernard Hankins and the creative duo of O.G. Rose, Michelle Upperman and Daniel Garner. Thank you so very much for joining us for the show today. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, and we're all here hoping that your voice will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.